Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jeff Schwartz, Fox Sports, former NFL offensive lineman, will join us. We'll go over the draft, maybe talk a little NBA, see what he's betting. He is always, even though he's an NFL guy, he is always betting all these different sports. He's got different takes and different angles on all this stuff. So excited to talk to Jeff. Excited for the draft. I think Jeff got a little bit of a bump, a little juice with that trade Saturday night with the Giants sending Dexter Lawrence to the Bengals, getting the 10th pick back. Kind of makes sense where I thought it was an overpay. I'm surprised they got the 10th pick back. But you know what? The Bengals, they're not good at drafting anyway. It's a weak draft. Let's just get a known commodity in Lawrence, and the Giants get younger and can kind of get rid of the disgruntled player. And you got Dart, and you got a new coach, and you got two top 10 picks. So understood it from the Giants' perspective. Certainly thought the Bengals overpay, but that maybe gives a little more juice here, a little more intrigue here now that the Giants two top 10 picks, Jets, couple first-rounders. They got six teams with multiple first-rounders. So excited to talk to Jeff about the draft. Draft just a handful of days away. But start here with the NBA. And and recording this right before Spurs-Blazers underway. Until Orlando pulls off the upset against Detroit, it was really just a home weekend. The one big story was Durant surprisingly being ruled out. And this is why this is a good lesson. If you notice, you just go through like the media's picks usually when people pick series. This is why people don't pick sweeps, because when you're wrong, you look like an idiot and you could be wrong right away. Where if you pick something in five, all right, they lose in game two. It's just not as fresh as you pick something in a sweep like I did. I picked the Rockets to sweep the Lakers. And right away, you're wrong and you're just like an idiot, feel like an idiot. And that's what happened. I don't know. Durant was going to be out, but even if Durant played, I mean, that offense for Houston is just painful to watch. 5 of 20 from twos in the third quarter, just miss after miss. And they killed, I thought they'd kill him on the glass. They did. I think it was 27-6 offensive rebounds for Houston. Doesn't even sound right, even though that's the stat I saw. I have to like triple check that. But it was just painful. They couldn't make a shot. And Durant, I would assume, is going to be back for game two. Rockets, 4.5-point favorite, still minus 220 on the series price. But I mean, I thought Durant was going to play game one, even with the knee getting banged up. And I get it. You know, you probably figure, let's not push it. He's older. We can probably win game one without him. And if we don't, it's not the end of the world. We come back. But hey, now you're in a fight. Now you're in a series. The longer this goes, the more it's possible. Luka comes back at some point. Reeves comes back at some point, although Luka sounds closer to Reeves. So that was interesting. Lakers pretty much led and controlled wire to wire. But other than that, and in that game wasn't really that competitive. 2-point game at half, but the Lakers pretty much controlled throughout in the second half. Except for Orlando-Detroit, if you didn't really watch any of the first six games, I mean, you didn't miss much. I mean, the first couple games, all right, Denver-Minnesota, I should say, was decent. Minnesota led by double digits early. Denver came back. Once Denver got control of that game, you figured they were in good shape. They were. Minnesota, I'd be a little concerned. I had Denver in six. I'd be a little concerned it doesn't even get to six. And I always say this, never overreact to game one. Game one is not always indicative of how the series is going to go. It's very easy to see game one and say, ah, that's going to be the rest of the series, because that's all you have to go by. But it's often not the case. Although with these set of games, I think it's pretty indicative. Outside of Rockets-Lakers, which I still think the Rockets will win, but it'd probably be a longer series. And if I knew Durant was going to miss game one and miss part of the series, I would have picked the Rockets still, but probably in a longer series, Rockets in six or seven. And that's probably where I think we're headed, but I don't trust the Rockets. And who knows with Durant being hurt, I don't trust the Rockets after watching that the other night. It is hard to watch these games and not be a prisoner of the moment. I get that. But Edwards didn't look healthy. He was banged up. It seemed like he was dealing with a knee issue. He just didn't look as explosive. So if he's not 100%, yeah, they'll have a good home court in Minnesota. I mean, who knows? It's they're 6.5-point dogs here in game two on Monday night. We got three games on Monday night. Not sure the level Minnesota can get to. And people look at the series 2 years ago and say, well, Minnesota beat them 2 years ago. Remember, they had Towns to guard Jokic and his size, which really helped. They had Nikhil Walker-Alexander to help on Murray. Murray was banged up. That was a different Wolves team 2 years ago, and it's a different Nuggets team now. So we'll see here. Maybe that could still be a good series. Cavs, I would expect that's more of what you're going to see in the series, where they demolished the Raptors. That was never really a game. Sixers-Celtics was a waste of time Sunday afternoon. The Suns and Thunder was a complete joke. That was a waste of time. That was a tough spot for the Suns. It reminded me, it was last year, the Grizzlies won the play-in, and then limped into OKC, who was hungry and rested at home and waiting, and absolutely buried Memphis, beat them by 50-something points. This was not quite as bad, but this was pretty bad, and it's going to be hard for OKC to not sweep this. It's going to be hard for the Suns to just score on OKC, and I don't know how many games OKC is going to lose before the conference finals, because you're going to have a walkthrough. This is just a cakewalk here in this series, and then the Rockets, the Lakers are going to limp in there with Luka maybe back by the end of, I guess if the Lakers would won, Luka's probably back. Otherwise, they probably don't win, or, you know, he's back soon. So I don't know. Either way, maybe I guess the over-under would be like a game and a half the OKC Thunder lose. Do they lose more than a game between now and the conference finals? I'm not sure. I think OKC's in pretty good shape to not only get to the Western Conference Finals, but get there pretty effortlessly in that series. And, you know, it's something we're talking about, I think, on Friday. A couple things. I always get excited for this Saturday of the playoffs to come. And by the way, the games being on Prime and streaming and Peacock, it's too much. I just want to turn the TV on and watch the games. I have all the stuff, too. I don't feel like doing it. It makes channel surfing hard. I wonder how many people just watch hockey just because it's on TV, because the hockey playoffs are all on, you know, ESPN, TNT, where Prime and Peacock, you got to go into the apps and you got three or four buttons to click. TV should not have regressed in the last 20, 30 years. I mean, as long as we've known, as long as I've known, you can watch TV and flip back and forth, flip to different channels, and it's easy. It's convenient. It's user-friendly. It's not like once you're in these apps, you're just committed to watching that game and you have to exit out, and it's just a whole process, which I know it's, you know, first world problems, but still it's annoying. It's annoying if you're trying to watch three or four different games. You're just kind of locked in on that one game. Frustrating how so many of these playoffs, I didn't realize so many of these playoffs are on streaming. But what was I saying? Oh, I was saying how every year you get excited for the playoffs, the Saturday, and all these games, they finally count, and then they start, and it's just a bunch of, you know, blowouts and bloodbaths. And that was most of the case until Orlando and Detroit. But hey, give Orlando credit. That's a tough matchup for Detroit, and everyone had them buried going into that Friday game against Charlotte. Charlotte got up like a 4-point favorite on the road in Orlando, which, you know, I was on some of the shows, and I thought, boy, that's getting out a little out of control. And I think I've talked about it in this podcast. We're getting a little out of control with the 3-4-point favorite on the road. Orlando just absolutely obliterates Charlotte, and then they turn around and they win game one, and that's a tough matchup for Detroit. Detroit, first off, that's not a typical one seed. They don't have a lot of offense. It's Cade Cunningham and not much else. It's a lot of effort and size and rebounding and toughness, all that stuff. But the problem is, when you're based on effort, you get to the playoffs, everyone's trying hard, and they're not bigger than Orlando. They're not more physical than Orlando, but, you know, look, we've seen this before. The home team loses game one. Very often they come out and they're motivated, they're focused, all that stuff, and they demolish the team that stole game one, in this case, Orlando. So 9.5 in game two. You're supposed to lay the 9.5. I should just bet it and not even think about it. I don't know. From a matchup standpoint, I just worry that this is not going to be that easy for a Detroit team that doesn't score easily. They don't take a lot of threes. They don't make a lot of threes. Detroit is now a -190 favorite only to win the series. I would not be surprised if Orlando is moving on to the second round here. I would expect a long series, but remember, before Orlando had this disappointing season, I talked about this, I forget what show, because I was getting confused where I say stuff. There were a lot of people picking Orlando, not only to go to the conference finals, but the NBA finals. Let's say if you aggregated people's opinions before the season, you probably had 15-20% of people picking Orlando to go to the NBA finals. So it's not like this team is completely out of nowhere. This is a team that I think they must have had a higher win total over under than Detroit heading into the year, and it's not like these teams have fundamentally changed. So, life on the line, I'd probably still pick Detroit in 7, but I would not be surprised at all, if Orlando won this series. And then, you know what? Orlando versus the Cavs in round 2, and they have played the Cavs recently in the playoffs. I mean, who knows? We're getting carried away. I think Orlando 50-1 at FanDuel to make the finals. Not the worst bet I've ever heard. Again, don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. And I always say game one, people are overreacting. Maybe I am overreacting, but I just don't think. And I thought when they drew that matchup, I thought that might not be easy for Detroit. And what kept me away from it on Sunday was just the rest factor for Orlando, the quick turnaround, you know, playing game on Tuesday, playing game on Friday, then on the road on Sunday against Detroit, who had been resting. But it didn't matter. That was pretty much Orlando wire to wire. Had a lead early, controlled it throughout, and it never really looked back. That was a pretty convincing, commanding victory for the Magic. So that gives the first round a little juice. Lakers-Rockets gives the first round a little juice. Orlando being up as the 8-1, that gives the series, that gives the first round a little juice. And the other thing I meant to mention too, and I discussed this, I think it was Bear who brought it up, but I say it every year. The first round being a best of five, just that was so good. And they stopped doing it, I think, in 2003, 2004, they switched it to seven. It used to be so much better because upsets didn't happen that much, but the threat of the upset was always there. And it just made it more exciting, more interesting. If the road team stole game one, all of a sudden game two is just absolutely for your life because you're all of a sudden facing elimination. If you lost that one, it was just, there was more urgency to it. A lot of these series are just so much a foregone conclusion where there's just, you know, the Raptors are not going to beat the Cavs. Suns, Thunder, we really need best of seven of Suns, Thunder. I mean, so many of these series are just a waste of time. I wish they went to back to a best of five, but they're never going to do it. They're never going to do it. There's too much money, and, you know, it's just, it's never going to happen, but it was better back when it was a best of five. There was just more urgency. It was more exciting. The games on Monday, Cavs laying 8.5 to the Raptors, Knicks laying 5.5 to the Hawks, Nuggets laying 6.5 to the T-Wolves. Do we get an upset? Do any of those teams, does anyone break up a money line parlay of Nuggets, Knicks, Cavs? Pays plus 155. I think they all win. I don't really want to lay the points here. I'll think about these games a little bit more. But I don't think, I guess I could see Minnesota making it close. I picked Knicks to win that series, I think, in six. I'm a little worried after seeing that it might go five. Again, I try not to overreact to this stuff, but I think Knicks win game two, might get a split in Atlanta, then probably close it out in home. If I had a do over there, I might go Knicks in five. Cavs, I think, are sweeping the Raptors. Anyone can always win a game. And I mentioned how I don't like picking sweeps, but I picked sweep before in that series, and I think sweep is very much on the table in that one. So we'll see. Then Tuesday, more of 76ers Celtics. Who needs more of that after what we saw Sunday? Rockets and Lakers, Tuesday night, 10:40. There's a little juice there. Magic and Pistons, there's a little juice there. More than a little juice, has an absolute must win for Detroit. Probably can't go back to Orlando down 2-0. I remember there was a Bulls Celtics series, I think it's 2017, where the Celtics might have been the one. Celtics were the higher seed, and they lost the first two in their own building, but then they didn't lose again the rest of the series. So you never know. It's never just a magic win. This game and the series is over, but that would be a stranglehold on the series, and that would be a very interesting scenario if the Magic are able to get game two. I don't think they will. I think the Pistons probably bounce back, but it's not an easy matchup at all for Detroit, and I would normally just lay the 9.5, figuring you're going to get their best punch, their best effort. It's just, maybe this is prisoner of the moment, but you watch that game on Sunday. Team A, if you knew nothing about anyone, Team A does not look better than Team B by 10 points, 9.5 points. So we'll see how that plays out. Thunder laying 16.5 to the Suns. I would guess the Suns played a little better, kept it a little closer. I mean, are you cutting in line to bet the Suns, though, after what you saw on Sunday? Probably not. So we'll see here. First round, or the first weekend of the first round, not great, but Orlando winning did give it a little juice. Like I said, Spurs and Blazers going on right now. So you at least have the Lakers, Rockets. That's interesting, even though the winner is running into the OKC buzzsaw. If you could ever get the Lakers through and somehow Luka and Reeves are back, that's at least interesting. That's at least, you know, something you have to watch. But this is going to be OKC, I think, in a waltz to the conference finals. But Rockets, Lakers, interesting. Magic, Pistons, interesting. The rest, we'll see what materializes. We'll see if the Hawks give us something. We'll see if the T-Wolves give us something. I think the second round is setting up to be good, but as of now, the first round, just kind of meh. The baseball, Yankees bounce back. Rice hits a home run every day. That is down to 25-1 for MVP. I mean, what do you know? You play one of your best players, he hits. He can hit. I never thought he'd be this good. He's really good. That bet's probably not going to win. It's probably going to be one of those ones that you give out 150-1 and he finishes, you know, top five or something. It ends up being really frustrating, but happy with the number there. Hopefully people tailed along. You know, a long way to go, but a good start for Ben Rice. Yankees bounce back. Pitching's looked pretty good. Hitting, Bellinger's picked it up a little. So Yankees, after a rough series against the Angels and a rough patch, they bounce back. The other team in New York, not so much. The New York Mets have now lost 11. This is really the story of baseball right now. 11 in a row. It's hard to believe. You're getting to the point now, is recording this, Atlanta's playing Philly, 8 back in the loss of Atlanta. Obviously there's a billion games left, but 8 is not nothing. And Atlanta know this. Atlanta built themselves a hole, dug themselves a hole last year in a similar fashion and could never get out. Sometimes you dig yourself a hole, you can never get out. And I know there's wild cards and all that stuff, but if you look NL Central, every team, oddly, is 3 games over. And you know, you're going to play these teams head-to-head. They're going to get hot. Lindor's going to get hot. They'll be better than this, I would think. But they just look like a team that's pretty mediocre right now. I'm sure the run is coming at some point where they look like a playoff team or borderline playoff team. But this team was, I think the stat I saw, they were 45-24 in June last year at one point. So they were 45-24. Since then, 45-70. Doesn't even sound right that that team, and this is not like, you know, a bad week, a bad month. That's 115 game sample size, 45-70. And now they're trying to shake it up and get rid of Nimmo and get rid of Alonso and bring guys in. By the way, Nimmo's doing incredibly well in Texas, but wow, what a disaster for the Mets. We'll see if they turn it around, but and they blew the game on Sunday. You knew Conforto, the ex-Met, up there with a chance to win the game is the winning run. I don't trust Devin Williams, and I just, if it would have felt perfect as a Met if Conforto, you know, hit one into the bleachers at Wrigley, but he didn't. He hit a double, and then once it goes to extra innings, you just knew the way the Mets are playing, you just knew they weren't going to win the game. They didn't score. Once they don't score, you're dead. They had a base open, and a man on third, one out, Horner up. The guy on deck hit 164. Horner's a good bat-to-ball hitter. I was surprised they pitched to him. They're probably going to lose the game anyway, but I didn't think that was the right move to pitch to him. But the Mets, 11 straight losses. Hard to believe. We're 7-4, now 7-15. So early, early panic time for the Mets. And yes, it's early. Yes, there's a lot of games left, but you got to start winning at some point. You can't go too much farther than, you know, 9-10 games under 500. It just, you dig yourself a hole sometimes you can't get out of. Games on Monday, I like this. The Monday morning game, the marathon game, Red Sox against the Tigers, Flaherty against Gray. Red Sox -136 favorites. Cardinals and Marlins, Braves, Nationals, lighter card. Royals and Orioles, Royals coming off the sweep to the Yankees. Orioles not playing great. They're a couple games under 500. Dodgers still in Colorado. Probably continue to beat up on the Rockies there. Blue Jays and Angels. Blue Jays have not played well. Angels have actually played okay. Angels have some pop in that lineup. Soriano's pitched great. Angels not a terrible team. And then the Athletics and the Mariners. Mariners off to a shaky start. Astros off to a bad start. The A's now 10-1 to the over in their home games. I forget what show I was doing this with. I think I said that 100 times on this already. But how the A's would be a good over team at home because they have good pitching, or they have good hitting, poor pitching. And they played a good pitcher's ballpark, a good hitter's ballpark, I should say. And they've gone 10-1 to the over. I've not played any one of them, so frustrated by that. But that has been a trend that I'm sure is going to start to get a lot of attention. These trends don't last forever. But if you're playing those overs, you're in Oakland's home ballpark, formerly Oakland, you're doing pretty well. So lighter card on Monday. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs underway. It's a good time of the year. Draft here in a couple days, finally getting a little juice to that. And we'll talk some draft. We'll talk some NBA with Jeff Schwartz. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we're back. Should have been more podcast. You can catch him. Fox Sports, former NFL offensive lineman. It is Jeff Schwartz. He joins us now. Jeff, a couple days to the draft. NBA playoffs. Lakers are going to the finals. It's a great time of the year. How's it going?
As we record this, the Thunder beat the Suns by like 40. How bad are the Thunder going to beat the Luka Reeves-less Lakers in game one if they beat the Rockets? Are they going to 75? What are they going to win that game by?
Yeah, Thunder might rest their starters in game one if that's the scenario. If they make it that far, and we're a long way from there, it would. You figure Luka and Reeves had come back by now. That would be so damning of the Rockets. But based on what I saw, and we'll get to some draft stuff, but based on what I saw Saturday night, and look, I thought this would be just a complete walkover for the Rockets. I didn't know Durant was going to play. Nobody did until Friday and then Saturday. But, man, even if Durant played, I don't know that I would have been right. That was so awful to watch offensively from the Rockets. Where are you at with the series? I know you gave the Lakers a shot.
Yeah, so I took the Lakers 5-1. I think even to the Lakers like to win the series 4-2 at a much bigger number. I mean, my wager will is quite simply this, right? This series is 3 weeks long, okay? Which is ridiculous. 3 weeks long. I don't know if Luka's back or not, but if he's back for game 6 or 7 or five, six, something, some sort of games, I like the Lakers, right? That my wager was like 5-1 the Lakers get Luka back. and they stole a game, right, in game one. They're probably going to lose game two, I would imagine, if KD plays. Steal one in Houston, get back 2-2, and anything happens, right? Like, that was my wager. It was that simple. And so I don't like the Rockets either. Then no one really likes the Rockets. So that was my wager on the Lakers. Again, I mean, we'll see how game two goes. I would imagine I'm going to bet the Lakers. The Rockets in game two. I just they didn't play. They played so bad. I mean, is Luke Kennard going to score 27 again? it's probably not.
4.5 on Tuesday night. Boy, 10:40. Are you staying up for this game or no? No, 4.5 point favorite. The Rockets are 205.5. The total. You'll find out in the newspaper the next morning.
That will be, like, last night was an 8:10 Eastern tip, right? It was a little earlier.
8:40.
Yeah,
Eastern.
I stayed up for a good amount of that game. So that was fun. But 10:40, just no chance.
Yeah. Any of these teams that we're recording this, Magic, Pistons, finally giving us a little drama here, at least early. But six of the games are in the books. It was just basically outside of the Lakers Rockets. It was all chalk. It was all blowouts. Any of the teams down 0-1 do you think make a run?
I mean, the most logical is probably the Wolves give the Nuggets a little bit of trouble, or maybe game three at home. The Nuggets are gonna do some damage in game two. I mean, they didn't play very well, especially early in that game. Jokic had so many turnovers. I think he had 2 points in the first quarter too. Like, he didn't play terribly well, and they still won that game and covered that game. But I think the Wolves in game three are gonna give them a little bit of grief. I mean, game three, you know, the home team, you know, gives a good run at it, but that's probably it. I just don't see a lot of these games being close. The Celtics are gonna dominate the Sixers in every game. We haven't seen the Spurs play yet. I think that's the same thing's going to happen. Maybe the Spurs are so young that this moment gets them, but so are the Blazers. It's not like the Blazers have a ton of playoff experience on their roster, right? So I just think this is the best case, by the way, for five-game series. Make these five games.
100%.
Like, it's so silly that you almost never get upsets. And actually, a five-game series would potentially allow for more upsets, right? Because you're not being a good team four times in seven games if you're the underdog, right? And I know that maybe they went to the seven games to allow the best team to win in all these series, but they're too long. They're weeks and weeks long. They're not fun. And then what the NBA does is they pre-schedule the whole thing, right? Well, so if every series goes four games, we wait like 10 days, 14 days to for the next round of basketball, which is so silly to me. So make it five games, make it shorter. Maybe we'll get some upsets, but it feels like all these are going to be very, very chalk. I did it, man. I took all eight favorites on the series price, Will, like 3-1. I did all of them together. You know, worst case scenario, I got to play the Rockets, you know, money or Lakers money line at some point, something like that, right? Like, otherwise, I just did it. Like, I don't expect any upsets.
Yeah, and I'm totally with you. The best of five, it made you think there was a chance of an upset. And they didn't happen that often, but it was just enough. Like, hey, best of five, anything can happen. Best of seven is a much different feel. I thought best of five was perfect, but hey, we all know it's about the money, the TV money. They're not giving it back. It's not going to go back to how it was, even though that was better. Any of this Monday night, are you just going to do your money lines parlay? Cavs 8.5 favorites over the Raptors, Knicks 5.5 point favorites over the Hawks, and Nuggets 6.5 point favorites over the T-Wolves. Let me just do it for you because I know what you're thinking. Three-team money line parlays plus 158. Are you in or are you out?
I'm probably in. I mean, I would be, you know, I think I would give the Wolves a chance, but again, the Nuggets just didn't play well in the first quarter. Like, you can imagine if they start the game fast and they get up 15 points, 12 points. Like, the Wolves aren't coming back, in my opinion, from that. I my favorite team to cover is probably the Cavs, though. Again, I mean the Raptors, I think, they're just not going to compete with the Cavs. The Cavs are really good at home. They ended up being a 13-point game, and it was, you know, more like 20 for most of the game. But I think the Cavs are going to do work in game two again. I would probably rank them Cavs, Nuggets, Knicks if I had to pick, against the spread.
All right, any more basketball? Or should we move to the draft?
We can talk about the Sacramento overs for the A's, 10-1 now for the season. Well, how about that?
Yeah,
I'm just doing every game. I don't know why. It's not like they're at sea level. They're at sea level. It's not like they're at altitude, but that ballpark, I don't know. It's that league with the PCL has a ton of runs, right? Is that the thing about that?
Yes.
That league?
Yep. And I said this before the year too, they're a perfect over team because they have a good offense and they have shaky pitching. So all of those things, and I'm kicking myself because I have not bet a single one of it. But yeah, that's been tough.
So other than that, I'm just we're getting ready for the draft on Thursday, buddy.
What did you make of the Lawrence deal? I get it from both sides' perspective. Bengals, you know what? You haven't been very good at drafting anyway, so at least take the known commodity. You are getting a little older, more expensive, as opposed to a draft pick, which is more cost-controlled. If you're the Giants, you start fresh under a new regime where you've got a young quarterback, you got a new coach, and you got two top 10 picks. You kind of mold the team however you want going forward. So I get it from both perspectives. I thought the 10 was a little lofty. What was your take? Who won the trade, if anyone, or was it kind of a win-win?
We have to see the Giants, you know, draft at 10, but on the surface, it feels like the Giants are the team that that wins this trade, right? I mean, I haven't looked at the odds. I love the John Ewing tweet that's like, the odds before and after something happened. I haven't seen that tweet from him yet. I would imagine the Bengals' odds did not change at all. I feel no different about the Bengals heading in the season than I did, you know, before the trade. Dexter Lawrence, though, I will be fair. Like, he's one of one. There's no D-tackle like him in the NFL. Excuse me, nose tackle. He's, you know, he plays the nose, but over the center for the most part. There's no one like him when healthy and when he's playing well. There's nothing like him, right? But is that the 10th pick plus, you know, $29 million, I think, a year and 1 year deal worth doing this? If you're in a win now mode, maybe it is, but it feels hefty. But again, the Giants, I think, did a great job here, right? You didn't want to pay him any more money. You get the 10th pick overall. You get 5 and 10. You're going to end up, you know, out of the draft with, you know, one offensive player, probably one defensive player, two immediate starters for your team. Don't have to pay Lawrence at all. So, you know, you save some cap room there as well. Feels like a good spot if you're the Giants. I like what the Giants did. I think this is the best they're ever going to get. And I mean, this is a 10th pick overall for a nose tackle. Like, he's good, but for a nose tackle.
Yeah, and weaker draft too. That kind of, you know, plays into it, but still 10th seems hefty. When I first saw the wording of the trade that it involved Lawrence and it involved the 10th pick, I said, all right, there's probably some other picks going back. You know, Giants are probably giving up a pick along the way too. I didn't think it was a one-for-one, a very unique trade. So interesting. What? I guess I'll start with this. We know Mendoza's one at two. Reese has been bad. I don't know if you saw this. Circa is now under 2.5 on Reese, Arvell Reese. Minus 290 for him to be the second pick, pretty much. Are you buying that? Is it still going to be, is this going to be minus 700 by draft day, or is this going to flip again where Bailey's the favorite? What do you think about the second pick?
So I have a guy that I trust pretty well for these wagers. And he's helped me out a lot in the draft. He gave me Trevon Walker a month before he was drafted one overall. He's helped me with other stuff. He told me 2 weeks ago Bailey's going two. I've stuck with it. I got like 3-1 on Bailey. Just from my overall thought about what they should do too, right? Like, you are a team that you need, if you are the Jets, immediate help at pass rush. Bailey's that immediate help, right? Now, Reese is a great football player, Will. That absolutely fantastic football player. He's also just not a pure pass rusher yet, right? He's like Micah Parsons, right? Off the ball linebacker, rusher. They're not the same player, by the way. You know, he'll turn into potentially a very good pass rusher. Bailey's the pass rusher now. So it kind of depends on where the Jets are, like, just team building wise. Do they want to sort of wait to fill this guy out? Do they want a guy now to help him rush the pass? I still think it's Bailey. I know and by the way, like, there's these numbers are moving based off of the same reports that we get. It's not like anyone has Jets inside information, right? In my opinion, like, this, it's just not happening. So I don't read much into this movement unless it's the day of the draft. Remember Baker Mayfield, like, got steamed up the night of his draft? You're like, okay, that feels real. I don't really, it's the same stuff we all get. Like, I don't think the Jets are telling people that they're drafting Reese. I don't think they're telling their agent. I don't think they're telling anybody. It's, they canceled a top 30 visit for Bailey. You know, the Chiefs are talking about trading up to three potentially because I imagine Bailey's at three. Like, those are the signs are there, Will, but no one has any inside information from the Jets exactly.
What do you feel like you know or you feel good about outside of that? Is there anything like, all right, this team and that player, you know, your mock draft, how much confidence would you feel filling out picks 1 through 5, 1 through 10? Yeah. I would say the other moving part, or the other kind of ramification of the Giants deal, we got a lot of teams now with multiple picks. Giants, Jets, Chiefs, Cowboys, Browns, and Dolphins. I think there's 6 teams with multiple ones, which last time we had this many, I think it was 2022, and there were a bunch of trades in the first round, which, you know, gives these teams ammunition. But I don't know. You tell me what you feel good about.
All right. So the wager that I think is still playable now, because the number is the juice is not too high, is over 1.5 quarterbacks in the first round. That number, I think it's still a minus 150, maybe climbing a little bit. That feels still bettable. I think Simpson's going the first round. Other stuff I've done is, Will, is just like just shots, man, in the dark. Like I think this draft is very hard to predict because you can have Mendoza 1, Reese 2, Bailey, Love, Downs. You could have, you know, Mendoza, Bailey, Reese, Sonny Styles, Love. I mean, I just, you know, like it could be any which way. I feel comfortable that Reese and Baylor are going 2 and 3, but maybe someone trades a 3 and really wants a different player at 3. I don't know. So I've not made a ton of wagers. The mostly just complete shots in the dark. Like I think I told you guys in the group thread, like Caden Proctor, 6th overall. Like I'm just some stuff just sort of randomly out there. I made some good bets on guys to be first round picks, and there's still a little bit of value out there just with some of the longer shots to be a first round pick. But even stuff like, you know what's crazy? Carnell Tate was like $3 to go first as first wide receiver. He's now way down. Tyson's almost even money now. I mean, off of what? Just because we had a good pro day like 2 days ago. The numbers just, they move so crazy sometimes. I don't have much today to give out. I wish I did, but you know, Caden Proctor to go 6th overall was 35-1 a month ago. It's not 35-1 anymore. So it's hard to find wagers today. You know, I think Vega, I'll give you maybe one now. Vega Ione, the offensive lineman from the Penn State, he's the best offensive lineman in this draft. I mean, his number is 14.5. I could see him going 10 to the Giants. I could see him go a little earlier. Dolphins maybe, if they really want to guard 11. I mean, that's certainly possible. But other than that, I think, I don't know about you, I think it's hard to find a lot of wagers right now.
It's tough. It's not easy. And last year got ahead of some numbers. Banks to go 6th overall, like 14-1. It closed like minus 300, and it did not get home. And things like that leave a mark. I bring it up all the time. I bring it up for a reason. Because
It's brutal,
it's just,
man.
It's hard to get numbers like that, and just when you come up empty, it's tough and it kind of burns you on the process. But hey, you win some, you lose some. If a team hired you and said, hey, we need some consulting advice, who's just, forget betting for a second, who's one player that's just way underrated that, you know, people are sleeping on? It could be a quarterback. Let's start with a quarterback. Is there any of these quarterbacks? Because, I mean, we know Mendoza's going 1, and then the talk is Simpson, and then there's a bunch of, you know, good luck, bunch of, you know, mid-round, late-round picks. Any of the quarterbacks you think, don't be so quick to write this guy off. Is there any of that?
I don't think so. Look, there are 32 quarterbacks in the NFL, starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Out of the franchise quarterbacks, Will, so that's sort of like guys on rookie contracts that are full-time starters and obviously guys with extensions and maybe guys in trade. Like, they're 27 of 29 are first-round picks. Like, any other – so really it's Jalen Hurts, right? Dak Prescott, Tyler Shuck, and that's it, I think. Like, that's it? They're all first-round picks, or like you have Arizona where you just have sort of nobody starting right now. So the idea that like Cole Payne, people like Cole Payne from North Dakota State, okay, but like, where do you draft him? Who's he starting for soon? I do think that Tyson's going the first round. I think teams have to take a shot on quarterback is what the league is, but the numbers are really tough, man. The numbers have shown over the years that guys who start 1 year, man, just not good in the NFL quarterback.
What did you do the year you were drafted, the night of the draft? I know you went 7th round. So,
oh yeah.
What was that day weekend like for you?
Oh man. So it was 2 days. It was Saturday and Sunday. It was rounds 1 and 2 and then rounds, you know, 3 through 7. And, I thought I'd go around 4 to 6. That was sort of like more I thought I was going to be at. So I tell you not to watch the draft. I did not watch the first day of the draft, rounds 1 and 2. There were 10 offensive tackles taken in the first 2 rounds of that draft. And they were 8 in the first round. You know, Jake Long and Gosser Churlis and Kyle Baker, I think, was one of them. And Jeff Otog was drafted by the Panthers as well. There were two in the second round. So I thought to myself, like, man, I'm getting drafted earlier. Like, I sort of had an idea of where I was ranked, you know, like 10th to 15th best tackle in the class and whatnot. And so I woke up Sunday morning on the West Coast, 6 a.m., and sat down and watched the draft. Just so foolish of me. Round three goes by. Round four goes by. Round five, I start getting calls. So you get a couple of calls, right? One of them is your agent, just like giving you updates. Another one is sometimes coaches call or player personnel and say, hey, man, like, we're thinking about drafting you. Like, stay tuned. And I basically have learned that that is their way to try to butter you up for when you're undrafted and they call you back. Hey, man, like, I wanted to get you. Like, I'm fighting for you. And that's what I've learned. So I got calls in the fifth round, like, hey, man, like, we're thinking about drafting you. We are. And it just never happened.
Who
called you? Funny enough, the Panthers, Dave McAzoo did, who ended up being drafted, being great coach. I really love Dave. But it was funny. So he did that. And then, like, you get a couple more calls here and there. I remember the Falcons called me once about something, you know, trying to blah, blah, blah. And then by the sixth round, I was so angry, dude. I just went outside and, like, took a walk, shot some hoops and whatnot. Here's the best part. So the Panthers called me. I'm pick 241, end of the draft. It's Brandon Bean who called me, now the general manager for the Buffalo Bills. That was his job at the time for the Panthers. And he goes, how do you feel about being a Carolina Panther, being drafted by the Carolina Panthers? And he said, how do you feel about being drafted by the Carolina Panthers? And at this point, end of the seventh round, I had essentially had a deal in place to be a New York Giant as an undrafted free agent. All right, my agent had set it up already. So I said to him, I swear I said this, I remember it so vividly. I said, at this point, I don't even care. And he said to me, well, congratulations, you're Carolina Panther. Here's John Fox. And wow. And back then, like, it's a little different now, but we had, so you used to have, you know, a veteran minicamp and a rookie minicamp, which you do now, but they're like scheduled the same time for every team sort of. Back then, John Fox did a veteran minicamp the first weekend of the draft. So I flew on Thursday to Charlotte. So I got drafted Sunday, flew to immediately Thursday, full team minicamp on Friday morning, which again, is odd. Like, you're not doing that very often. I took Lightning puck line for the second period. They just scored back-to-back goals. Let's go, Lightning. Like this. It's nice when your wagers win, Will, isn't it? Like, it's nice.
It is better.
Nice when it happens, hopefully. They need one more goal here. It would be nice. So I went right to Carolina. I didn't know where Charlotte was. I thought the team was in Raleigh. I grew up in Los Angeles. I don't think I knew Charlotte existed because, you know, the state capital is Raleigh. Like, that's what I thought of the Carolinas, Raleigh. And then, you know, some of the stuff that I thought about the Carolinas where it was confirmed driving in the low country. But mostly I just had no idea. No idea. I Googled it, looked it up, just had no idea.
And that had to be, so you're drafted, what, 2008?
Yeah.
That was one of the first years they moved the draft to Thursday, right? Because they used to.
No, it was Saturday, Sunday still.
Oh, so you were still Saturday, Sunday.
My brother, 2-3 years later, was definitely like Thursday, Friday.
Okay.
And my brothers were so different, dude. It was so funny. So we basically knew Mitch was going to be a second round pick. Like, that was the consensus, essentially. And but we thought the Falcons at 55 really liked him. So we're just sitting there. And mind you, mine as well, we had a party set up Sunday night at the local Mexican restaurant up the street, El Torito. And my dad canceled the party when I didn't get drafted, essentially. And then I got drafted and everyone showed up anyway. So it was a great time. We had a great party. So for my brother, we made sure to not schedule the party until, like, after the draft was over, essentially. So we scheduled it for Saturday night, right? So Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. So we're just sitting there on the couch, start of the second round, and the Browns call him. Pick 39. Mitch gets drafted immediately, like right at the beginning of the second round. And we're just like, okay, so what do we do now? So we went turned the TV off. I went to dinner. Like, it's one of the things where we just didn't have family, like, with us for those days, especially we learned after my experience to, like, just not go that hard, I think. And you always see the videos of everyone's family around them. We just didn't, like, have people, we just purposely didn't do that for my brother. I remember just the feeling like, oh, okay, well, it's Friday night at, you know, 4:30 Pacific. like he's drafted. So we went to Fogo de Chao, had a dinner. Then we had Mitch's party the next night. Everyone came and partied about us. It's just such a different experience than mine.
Yeah. 2010, it moved to Thursday night. For some reason, I thought it was
still Friday. So I remember we went to see my buddy play baseball. Was he playing travel baseball? I don't know what he was doing. I went to like my buddy's baseball game. Like maybe it was like a Saturday morning like rec league baseball game to take my mind off the draft.
Wow. Speaking of rec league, you coach your daughter's softball team.
Oh, I gotta send you the video.
Are you suspended for the next game? Are you allowed in the league? I know there was, I've heard, and I didn't hear this from you. This is all over the internet, that there was a run-in between you and the umpire.
Is this
true? What happened?
I didn't send you guys the video. One of the opposing team recorded the game on Game Changer, which is awesome. I don't record the game. Unfortunately, we don't have the capability to do that. So basically she messed up a procedural issue, right? And I just asked her about it. We conferred, we talked, and then I turned my back. I walk away. I'm done. Will, she chased me down the line to talk to me more.
Wow. After
I ended the discussion, and she's about ready to toss me. I was right. She was wrong. It was a whole mess, dude. Their pitcher was throwing illegal pitches to start the game. That I had to tell the umpire about that. It was a lot of things that just. And then the worst part is their coach like gave me this lecture after the game. I went up to her in the parking lot. I was like, hey, my commissioner tried to explain like what maybe have happened and like, you know, I sort of get it now. But you know, I'm sorry, I kind of like got a little heated there. And she's like, you know, this whole speech. I played college softball and you know, I'm much older now. Like softball into some point. I don't care if we win or lose. My job is just to like teach the girls like how to play. And like, I don't argue with the umpire though. You know, I'm like basically like admonishing me for arguing with the umpire and like that's setting a bad example for the girls. And I'm like, first of all, I didn't say I played in the NFL, but I'm like, I'm supposed to protect my girls, man. Like, what am I supposed to do? Not like let them, like that was the rule. The umpire did not follow the rule that we have in place for this situation. Of course, I'm going to talk to the umpire about it. I didn't yell and scream at the umpire. Like, why would I? I'm not screaming at her, but very heated yesterday, Will. I almost got my first Cowboy Joy West. He might have ejected me immediately. I was displeased.
What do you do if you get thrown out in one of those games? And I've never been thrown out, but there was an incident last year where I thought, man, this could happen. Where do you go? Do you just go sit in your car? Like, yeah. Just to drive home? Like, what happens?
Yeah, basically, like, we had a dad... assistant coach thrown out, dad assistant coach in like a playoff game in like AU softball like 3 years ago in a playoff, like first inning. He made a comment how like the umpire was blind and just the umpire was like, you're out of here. He just like sat like in the outfield.
I know it was kind of complicated, the text you sent about like what the rule, but what was, is there a simpler version of what was the
okay,
the
so basically here's the deal. So if in 10U softball where we play, if the ball, This is rec league. It's a different rule for like challenge or travel. On a ball that's pitched, okay, if the ball's not put in play, a base runner gets one base. That's it. If they go to a second base, two things happen, Will. One, they can be tagged out. That's fair. Totally fair. But B, if they reach the next base, the play's over. The play's dead. You send the girl back to the base they were previously at. That simple, right? So... we had a girl steal second base, bad throw, one base, that's all you get. She instinctually saw the ball get by the second baseman, ran to third base. You see me on video, I guess I need to get that part of the video. My hand is like up in the air. I'm like, don't go. She runs anyways. And the second baseman then is holding the ball. My girl is on third base. The play should be over. Time, play's over, go back to second base. Instead, the umpire said, I'm keeping this live. And... their coach said, hey, come tag the girl out. And she's staying on the base. And my girl freaked out. She left the base to go back to second and then came back to third and was tagged out while on third base. But there's a rule, so it's very in the weeds here, called the look back rule, which I don't understand quite honestly. If you like, if someone has control of the ball, especially in the circle though, you're out if you leave the base. But like, if you try to take an extra base in either direction, back or forward, and don't commit to doing it and go back to the previous base you were at, you're out. my girl took one step off third base thinking she was going to run back to second base. Everyone was saying that she was in the wrong. She went right back to third base. She got tagged while on third base. He called her out. The play's dead, man. Send the play back. Send her back to second base. That's all. And I asked her, I was like, why didn't you blow it dead? Oh, I didn't feel like it. What do you mean you didn't feel like it? That's the rule is send her back. Right. Here's the video. I sent you the video of me arguing. I'm sending the video of the play where she just like stood on third base. The play's dead. Everyone knows it's dead. Everyone on the field stopped. Frustrating,
it's a tough
man.
One. It's a tough one.
Like my thing with umpires is even in pro sports, and I say this about NFL officiating. Well, I think it's a very simple one. My thing is very simply like objective calls, holding, pass interference, even balls and strikes. There's a strike zone, obviously, but they're objective, right? Like you see a ball or strike. If those are messed up, you can be upset, of course. You can moan and be upset, but like that happens. They're humans doing it. But to me, procedural things like that are not acceptable, right? It's a black and white rule. And that, you know, if you mess up the spot of a ball for some odd reason, or you wind the clock when you shouldn't do it, or you like something like that. Like that to me is a procedural issue in the NFL. Those can't be wrong. You call pass interference when it's not pass interference. It happens. In this situation, like she procedurally was wrong. The play is over. Send her back to second base and let's continue playing. And the girl was tagged out while on third base. She was sitting on third base. I even emailed the kid's mom this morning. I was like, I didn't have time to talk to her yet because we came back and scored three in the last inning and won. I was so excited. I should have spoken to her about it. I emailed her, like, I'm sorry I didn't talk to her about this yesterday. Like, you know, I'll see you tomorrow at practice. Like, please tell her it's not her fault. I just felt bad. Like, this girl, like, is confused, doesn't know what's happening. It fired me up. But we're getting better. We won three in a row. We're playing better. We're doing some good things. So I like where we're at right now. It's fun.
I'm happy to hear that. Your softball team's winning. Lakers are winning. Got the draft here. So good times. What's the best thing you cooked recently?
So I made this tonight. I made chicken tacos. I do chicken thighs, fajita seasoning or taco seasoning, whatever. I sweat down onions and poblano peppers for like 45 minutes, get them real mushy. Essentially, and I just combine the chicken with the peppers and onions, and I get the tortilla in the pan or a flat top if you want to do like a you know, put the cheese on there, right? Kind of melt the cheese in there, and then I put the chicken mixture in there and fold up like a taco. And you can have a dipping sauce if you want. It's delicious, dude. Like the little bit of poblano heat in there. It's not spicy. Just a little bit of the heat. Oh, it's fantastic.
On that note, we'll wrap. Jeff, appreciate your time, man. Anything you want to plug? Where can we find you?
You can find me at Jeff Schwartz on social media. Bear Bets, of course, as well.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Wednesday. See you then. Probably do a little draft or playoffs as the draft gets closer and closer. So rate, review, subscribe. We appreciate some reviews continuing to come in. Saw a couple trickle in, but keep them coming. We'll do a contest soon. See you Wednesday.